Oh, hey there, everybody. I'm Guy Branum, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over the pop culture we all love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining, our digital strategist, Winter Mitchell.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. Journalist Margaret Wappler.
Hello there.
We missed you last week, Margaret.
We did. I missed you guys. I was lost in the woods.
With grizzly bears.
With grizzly bears.
And DJ Oliver Wang.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm doing all right. That was very late night slow jams.
How I roll.
All right. I'm going to go around the studio and have each of you tell me. We ask a question every week. They're usually provided to us by someone on the Reddit forums or our Facebook page. This week, it was Winter's mom.
Wait, is this for real?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
What's your signature or theme song? Winter, what is your signature theme song?
The Big Payback by James Brown.
What?
Just because I love, you know how I feel about swift revenge and upholding for the good of all people and smacking back. So that song, I remember when it brought me out of a really deep depression when I was 18.
Don't cross her, boys. Margaret, what's your theme song?
Well, this immediately makes me think about what your karaoke song is. Is that the same thing?
I think the way she, knowing her, having her giving birth to me.
Yeah, you have her DNA.
I have her DNA. She's asking, like, what's your, like, theme song? Like, when you're walking down the street, she's thinking about Shaft. And Shaft had a theme song. And she's thinking about, what's the song that just empowers you and is, like, your power song?
Oh, God. You know, I will just answer this as a karaoke song. And that's all I can do. It is empowering. One of my go-tos is Nancy Sinatra's These Boots Are Made for Walking.
Oh, yes.
Because you just can't go wrong with it.
Can't.
I mean, the boots are made for walking, and they're going to walk all over you.
Oliver, what is your theme song?
I'm going to cheat, because I'm going to come up with two different ones. One would be, if I were to imagine, as Winter described, the music that I would want to walk through the world at my back with, it would just have to be something by DJ Premier, and I wouldn't have to necessarily pick a beat specifically. It would just be something that he would have scored. The alternative, my second pick, would be the song Secret Agent Man, which everyone says thinks it says Secret Asian Man,
yep,
because it sounds like that in the song. So, yeah.
So you want to be a spy, and I want to be like a 60s long-haired pop star. There,
and I kind of want to be a soul singer from the 60s, soul legend. So I think this makes total sense.
Mm-hmm, I see it.
To move forward a decade, my theme song is so embarrassingly on the nose, but I could never say anything else.
Oh, my God.
It is I'm Coming Out by Diana Ross.
Mm-hmm.
Like...
Mm-hmm.
Well, no. It's so terrible. Like, 2 years before I came out, I was obsessed with that song. And just, like, it made me so excited. And I just feeling its rhythm as I walked. And then I realized how horribly, horribly appropriate it was. All right, you guys. Coming up on this week's show, Winter's going to fill us in on what she learned at South by Southwest, and we'll be sharing our latest musical recommendations. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or events have caught our attention this week. So, for example, I have been all about Monica Lewinsky's TED Talk.
Yes.
Margaret, you also want to talk about this. Let's make this one big, happy thing I'm all about.
Mm-hmm. I'm into it.
For me, her emphasis on a sense of personal responsibility in the age after privacy is, like, valuable and meaningful. But I'm bothered by this narrative of words as violence and creating sort of a situation that is, like, trolling is one thing, but also... This is a woman who had perjured herself. This is a woman who had kind of thrust herself into the public eye. Yeah, she was only 22, but she was an adult. And, you know, when 22-year-old adults steal some cigarettes and are black and poor, they get shot. And we're all sort of like getting all over ourselves about the fact that this woman had to deal with a rough situation that she kind of created. What are your thoughts?
Well, I don't think she entirely created it. That's the thing. I think she was a 22-year-old girl who had an affair with a man who was much more powerful than her and wielded a lot more power than she did. And I think there's no way she could have anticipated the absolute insanity that whole event would drop at her door.
Yeah.
I mean, from Linda Tripp to the Star Report to Clinton getting impeached. I mean, I don't think Monica Lewinsky was thinking about any of that when she put on her little beret and flirted with the president. I mean, I'm not saying that she's not responsible for her actions, but I also just don't think that that was, I mean, that was just such an extreme reaction. And I think she was trolled. I think she was like the person who was originally trolled. I mean, at least definitely at the level.
It was such a different time. We did not understand any of these possibilities.
But it didn't even happen with anything other than simple technology. I
think she suffered repercussions in like face-to-face world.
No, she suffered repercussions in face-to-face world, but she was really lucky the internet was still so young because there was definitely a huge amount of discussion about it. She became an adjective and a verb and a noun like immediately. But the other thing that I can't stop thinking about while you guys have this discussion, I keep giggling like Beavis over here, is John Goodman as Linda Tripp, just like sitting on the phone, like, right. And then what happened? I feel like she did what any girl that age would do and hoped against hope, and probably was a little bit hoping that she wanted it to get out, that she thought he was probably going to marry her in her mind. And, you know,
you can delude yourself pretty deep at that age.
Like, I give the best BJs in the world. This guy's totally going to dump his wife.
The power disparity in that relationship was crazy. I mean, that was something, and back in the 90s, we didn't know how to talk about stuff like that. But, like, I was also interested in Ashley Judd saying that she was going to, like, press charges against the guys who were, like, Twitter trolling her while she was at University of Kentucky game. And, like, it's hard because we do live in a world that is constantly making women scared to exist.
Mm-hmm.
But also, everybody wants to be iCarly. And if you're playing the game of being iCarly, if you want to have your web show, people are going to get to leave mean comments.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, I think what happened with Lewinsky is different, though, because
she's not a YouTuber.
Yeah, she wasn't out there like, I'm going to get famous. I mean, she definitely is ambitious. It's always been there. I mean, to get your first job and have it be the White House is pretty awesome and pretty much a sign of ambition. But I just don't think she was looking for, like, fame. And I think in the way that she's handled this whole situation, like in the almost 20 years since that whole scandal happened to her, shows that she was never really looking to bark up that tree. Do you know what I mean?
Except for the immediate right after it all happened, and she did the equivalent of Dancing with the Stars by getting a Weight Watchers or a Jenny Craig, you know, campaign.
I think she floundered for sure.
She floundered. She wanted to start purses. She wanted to do a whole bunch of other shit that didn't work out. And then she just realized she'd have to sit back at home until this sort of
blew over for the next
15 years. I mean, it blew. I've seen her twice in the last 5 years, and once was at a Ralph's, and it was a really sad interaction. And then the other time,
but you went up to her and like had a conversation.
No
with her.
Way.
So how was it a sad interaction?
I got into my car after a really long day, and I looked across from me in the car, and it was her in a murdered out Prius, and she just looked up at me and gave me like a half smile, and I was like, my day's not that bad. My day couldn't be this bad.
She gave you a half smile.
Like a super half smile.
Like a tentative, like, are you?
Yeah.
You know, not everyone can play sex infamy as well as, let's say, Kim Kardashian, you know. So.
It's true.
Yeah.
True.
Well, Margaret and Winner particularly, I was always fascinated by the extent to which she was not capable of taking control of her own narrative at the time.
Yeah.
Like that she was a creature whose voice we never heard. And like part of me is like, oh, she was only 22. And part of me is just like, that's her. She wasn't somebody, you know.
She was totally manipulated, though. She was every single thing that happened post that. You can tell this girl had no clue for sure. And I agree with Margaret's point that this was going to happen. But she was being manipulated by Barbara Walters. She was being manipulated by the White House, by, you know, Kenneth Starr. She's being manipulated. I mean, the woman was completely pulled apart in public, beyond the whole, it was.
Yeah, and I don't think the context existed yet
yeah.
that she could fill now. Like this whole cyberbullying thing that she's grabbing onto, the slut shaming thing that she's grabbing onto, none of that existed as a way to talk about what happened to her. So she was just out there in the wind, just a giant punchline.
Yeah.
And I think, too, like, if you listen to those old tapes, what she said to Linda Tripp, I mean, you can hear a girl who's, like, really young, pretty naive, just, like, doesn't have a lot of control over herself yet.
Or anybody to talk to about this shit. She didn't have any good, like, girlfriends from college.
Yeah, and Linda Tripp goes and breaks girl code on her, like, completely betrays her. Like,
we didn't have girl code on the air back then. That's the problem.
But I would add, I mean, who does get to control their own narrative if they're in the public eye. I mean, Bill Clinton,
true,
he's never going to escape this. I was just reading the other day that one of the portraits that was made of him, the artist deliberately put in the shadow of a dress very subtly into the background as a way of sort of commenting on it, which, you know, I just find these kind of things kind of fascinating. But with someone like Clinton, like, he's always going to be associated with the affair. So even he, as a former president who is, as many people point out here, infinitely more powerful in some ways, if we're talking about the idea of controlling your narrative, I don't know if anyone in the public eye has that power, whether it's Monica Lewinsky, Clinton, or anybody else.
That's true. And I do think, you know, there's speculation about why is Lewinsky stepping forward now? Like, why, you know, in addition to the context that I was talking about with cyberbullying and so forth, like, is part of the reason she's stepping forward is because Hillary Clinton might run for president. Mm. And that's only going to reemerge, that whole scandal. Oh, yeah. So I think there's this idea that she's trying to get ahead of it. She's trying to at least be like, wait a minute, guys, if you're going to talk about me again, I'm going to be part of it.
Exactly.
Well, I would say if anyone involved in that was able to control their narrative, it was Hillary. Look at the ways Hillary has basically provided us with a breadcrumb trail to a different understanding of her.
Yes.
Like, the texting meme did everything. The texting meme, like, shifted the way we understand her from politician's wife to lady what runs the world.
Yes. Well, and then back then, like, Hillary Clinton was still battling this idea that she was an ice queen, that she was intimidating, that
but
she
now
wasn't
she's owning
warm.
It. But
and
she's
then that happened
now.
To her, the whole Lewinsky scandal, and suddenly she was vulnerable, and she was a woman that had been crossed and done, you know, betrayed. And I think that actually weirdly helped her.
I think that it's okay that she went through that, because at the end of the day, we're talking about a presidency, not someone's marriage. Yeah. We already have precedent that marriages in the White House are notoriously difficult to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Bill Clinton will always have a very strong legacy because he has more accomplishments to sit his legacy on top of. She did a purse line in a Jenny Craig endorsement. Okay. Like, it doesn't.
It's not much.
It's not much. I mean, obviously, the woman had been through a tremendous amount, but she
the
can
now.
Go ahead.
The one thing you have to say for her through all of this, an amazing head of hair.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yes, gorgeous.
I also thought a lot about the outfit that she wore for the TED Talk.
Yeah.
It was so strategic.
Yeah.
Like, she was very, like, business casual, but, like, there was, like, some attractive.
I haven't seen it. I'm assuming it was not a blue dress.
No.
It certainly was not.
She deserves to get hers, okay? I mean,
she does.
I always thought at the worst case scenario, if people don't take her seriously for anything else other than that, the fact that a man risked the entire world. Power of the world with one finger because she gave great BJs.
I want to come back to a point that I think Guy was trying to make earlier, which is that
I'm not denouncing that she's less than because she gives great BJs, by the way.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Duly noted. Which is this idea that when the scandal broke out in the era that it did, it was already in sort of 24/7 news cycle, but it was pre-Twitter, pre-social media, but certainly post, you know, Kennedy era where he's fucking everything in sight and no one's talking about it because that was just the code. I mean, I'm just trying to imagine what something equivalent to, you know, if Obama got caught up in some kind of sex scandal, I mean, it would make the Lewinsky thing look quaint by comparison.
I feel like nobody would care
Oliver,
as much.
Oliver, you make a really interesting point that at that point in time, we had 24-hour news, but from four sources, from cable news.
Right,
at this point in time, we actually have a greater diversity of voices, and there would be a Jezebel there for her. There would be a toast there.
Oh, don't
to stand
let
up and
Jezebel
say
to
what
get
she
the
although,
there for
although
her.
She talks about how the feminists burned her at the time, Monica Lewinsky.
Yeah,
like,
I don't,
that she was tossed around and brutalized by them too.
I don't think there's a silver lining that I could really pull out as to if the same set of circumstances unfolded today, I just think it would be infinitely worse, and I don't really see what the it gets better moment with this would be. At least not in the short run. I think, you know, it would just
if
be
she were under 18, she would have been a victim. She was over 18, so she was a willing participant.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So like that's why I can't give her that much like good for you, girl. Like, if you need to make a brand out of it, now is as good a time as any to go out there and do it. And guess what? People have gotten a TED Talk for less.
Well, a couple of years ago, the rumors were that she got that $12 million book advance. And I do wonder if this is part of shaping that book before it comes out. Like, she Oh. The Vanity
right. the
Fair
book,
piece.
The book never did come out.
Right.
Yeah.
So I Good do points. Wonder if she's now mm. shaping this into, like, not just, like, my story, because,
but
like...
this would be a different version of Leaning In, because I'm very weird about the Cheryl oh.
She's going to tell us about that dick. She's going to tell us about that dick.
Well, I guess that's one thing we're all waiting for.
I think she wants to find a way, though, to, like, dignify her story a bit. So she's going to, like, be like, okay, yeah, I did this whole thing, but also I'm going to save all the victims of cyberbullying in the world.
I do think the why now question is interesting that you raised. And the timing with the inevitable, it seems, Hillary Clinton run or nomination, maybe it is just coincidence. It's hard to...
Well, Ted Cruz came out and said he's going to save the Constitution today. Right. So...
You know what?
Thank you, Ted Cruz.
Thank you, Ted Cruz.
And Donald Trump, I have to give him credit on this. He is raising objections to the fact that Cruz was born in Canada. So at least Trump...
Come on!
At least he's consistent.
Which
at least the man is consistent.
Me,
Canada's just another state.
Not too...
Oh, my God,
that.
Margaret. That is so...
I mean that with love.
I still want to understand the Ashley Judd thing, but because I'm not sure. How do these things tie together exactly?
Because Monica Lewinsky is campaigning against cyberbullying and she's honestly just making a point of we should be more circumspect about how we approach social media, all of us, and not just think about what our rights are, but also what our responsibilities are. Mm. I don't have a problem with that. Ashley Judd was at a University of Kentucky game.
Right.
She's like making out with some dude. And people were just talking smack.
Okay.
And some of it ranged into the terrible territory, but she was saying she was going to press charges against them.
Okay.
And it hits my civil libertarian bone. It makes you can't press charges against someone for just making noise, like for threatening you, yes, but you're a public figure. Like, people get to talk shit about you because you have so much more infinitely magnified voice than they do.
Yeah,
I realize it's Ashley Judd who hasn't made a movie or a decent movie in 10 years, but still, Margaret.
Ooh.
Well, I was just going to say, she's been striking out about that type of stuff for a long time now. I mean, a few years ago when there were some pictures taken where she didn't have makeup on and looked puffy or something like that, and people really slammed on her. Like, she came back with a force to that, really condemning people for the way they scrutinize women. And I mean, I see both sides, because at one hand, like, yeah, it is kind of a disgusting culture when people dogpile on a woman for not wearing makeup in public, like, ooh, that's so horrible. But at the same time, like, yeah, she doesn't have to be a public figure, and she has chosen that, and she makes, I mean, like you said, she maybe hasn't had a great movie in a while, but like, she's making big cash money compared to a lot of people.
Well, and also, nobody talks shit at Margaret Atwood for not showing up with makeup on. Part of Ashley Judd's job is about being pretty and having makeup on.
Right.
Well, I hate when they get mad.
Like,
that
live by the sword, die by the sword a bit.
Right. But I think this culture has never seen people age before.
True.
In that sense. They've never seen people age. So, I mean, like, people are going to make comments. So if she's getting mad at people because they're calling her a slut and a whore, yes, be upset about that. If they're making actual threats against her life, then yes, try to sue or get the perpetrator or whatever, catch him. But, like, these are idiots. These people don't even know what they're having for breakfast, if they ate breakfast, what time to take it. They plan their shits out. Like, they're not going to come for you in that real way. They've just didn't know. You used to be looking one way. Now you look a different way. This is literally all they're thinking. It's very simple.
I just think we've been living through, you know, the Wild West of how people, of online behavior. And, you know, as a sociologist, I was just talking to my class about the idea of social values and norms, and the idea that we maintain certain codes of etiquette because it's what we're socialized to do. But if you're thrown into an environment where none of those rules are set, then people just go wild with it, which is exactly what we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And while I respect the civil libertarian aspect of not trying to overregulate, I kind of feel like we could use a little pushback in the other direction and actually create some consequences and then reevaluate from there. But I feel like people get away with maybe not literal murder online, but, you know, the worst kinds of behavior. Yeah, and there's very little pushback. I shouldn't say pushback. There's very little consequences awaiting people, except in the cases where Kurt Schilling manages to get someone fired from their part-time job because they're making rape jokes about his daughter. And I got to say, I kind of respect him for using the power that he had to do it. The problem is your average, let's say, 14-year-old doesn't have that power.
Yeah, I mean, if we have libel and we have slander and those kinds of concepts for the press, I mean, I just wonder if there is something that can be enforced for people who take this to the absolute extreme.
Like internet watchdogs that are like sitting around and monitoring the billions of streams that come down. Like even YouTube can't keep up with the amount of porn that gets uploaded. It's just too hard to manage. You have to have some vigilance as a person. You just need to have vigilance. You need to practice vigilance.
Well, we all,
if it bothers you, figure it out.
We lack structures for talking about this stuff. Everyone behaves as though this isn't real. We all behave as though internet dating is embarrassing and that these interactions aren't actual interactions with other people. And I like, for all of our parents particularly, I'm like, how do you parent for this world where like maybe a quarter of your kids' daily interactions are going to be through this box potentially?
Well, I mean, so far, I mean, my daughter's 10, so she's not using Twitter. She's not using Facebook. I mean, she's aware of all these things because she sees
know
me.
Of.
No, I'm pretty sure she's not. I mean, I...
Is she excited about your Facebook, though? Is she like,
no, well, her, no, her thing is, please don't, if I'm taking a picture with my smartphone, she's like, don't put that on Instagram, don't put that on Facebook, you know? So she actually is monitoring me at this point.
Nice.
As to what awaits her, you know, out there in the future, I'm not sure yet. I figure it's one of those, like, conversations we'll cross when we get there. But I think, you know, everything seems a little bit cliche would be to say that you recognize that there are going to be some unpleasant and mean people out there and that you need to anticipate that that might be the case. And also just be vigilant and be careful about how you manage your sort of online presence. So hopefully it'll be through sort of these little baby steps that will sort of get her along with that. But again, you know, I both fear the worst and hope for the best as to what might lay out there in the next couple of years. Mm-hmm.
You guys, we got so all about something that we're going to have to go to a break and then come back and let everybody else be all about something. Pop Rocket will be right back after this. Hey guys, it's that special time of year. It's Max Fun Drive, when we ask you guys to step up and do what it takes to keep all of the Maximum Fun podcasts funded, but particularly us, Pop Rocket. Please go to MaximumFun.org/donate. Give and say that we're one of your favorite podcasts, because all of us here are working for, we've been working for free thus far. And it would be nice if we could, you know, get the resources we need to make it a little bit easier for us to do this job and to make sure that Colin is being paid for the work he does for us by this show. Margaret, Oliver, Winner, what have you had to give up to get this show off of the ground over the course of the past 6 months?
Well, since we've been taping on Tuesdays, pretty much half of Mondays, I spend researching and reading and thinking and jamming so I can pick all the goodies for the show and try to remember people's names, you know, that kind of stuff. I'm always talking about forgetting names, but yeah. I live in fear of doing that.
I'm missing dinner with my daughter and wife right now.
Oh, gosh.
And neither of them are really happy about that.
Oh, jeez, Oliver. I'm going to start crying.
Okay, I'm going to start crying. Sorry about that. I've only just given up my dignity. So,
but how much was that worth?
Wow.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm playing. I'm
You're
playing.
Not playing.
I'm playing.
You're not playing. Let's I'm wrap playing. This up. Give us some money so Oliver can watch his mouth.
Yeah. And so that Maximum Fun will choose to keep this show going. I mean, Jesse and Colin started this show so that it would, like, because they thought it would be a good idea, but they've been doing it basically from the general funds at Maximum Fun. This is the point in time when we really have to show that we are a worthwhile endeavor. And Maximum Fun Drive has been doing great. We hit the 2,000 new and upgrading Ooh. Donors. And yeah, it's exciting, but they've created a stretch goal. We're now aiming for 4,000. Now, every new donor will also mean we'll donate 5 meals to an LA regional food bank. And if we hit 4,000 new and upgrading donors, every Maximum Fun show will release 2 extra episodes in the next year. And there will be fun and awesome little other gifts from the show specifically. Margaret, I think you said you would step up with an offer, right?
Yeah, you guys may not know this about me, but I am a haiku master.
Oh.
So the first 10 people who tweet at us, I will write you a specialized haiku. I will ask you a couple of questions, though, about like what your favorite movies are and your favorite music so I can literate with references. It will be delightful.
And then let's see, what do I do? I will, if you guys donate money and... I go over 3,000 followers on Twitter. It's like a two-part.
Oh.
Then I will give you credit for an app that you'll want to download and get credit for. I'll work it out. I'll pull some strings, but you'll be pleased.
Winner is making shit happen.
Yes, no, I didn't Oliver. Even think about the followers. Oh, my God, yeah.
I make mixtapes, so I will hook you up with a mixtape.
Damn, that's a good offer.
Awesome. And for the 10 people after the 10 people who tweet at Margaret, for the next 10, if you provide me with a specific adjective, I will write a your mom joke about your mom. But you have to tell me whether she is old or fat or ghetto or skinny. I need to know so that I can create an appropriate joke. All right, you guys. So please donate now. Go to MaximumFun.org/donate. All right, that's enough asking you for money. Let's get back to the show. Hey, guys. It's Pop Rocket. We're back. With me in the studio are
Margaret Wappler,
Oliver Wang,
Winter Mitchell.
All right, Margaret Wappler, what else are you all about this fine week?
Well, I want to give a quick shout out to Pitchfork's A Bechdel Test for Music. This is a playlist they created for Spotify. Of course, the Bechdel Test is usually used in movies. The graphic novelist Alison Bechdel came up with it, and it was all about, like, if there's a scene, it has to have two women, they need to be talking to each other, and it needs to not be about a man. So some smart person at Pitchfork put together this Spotify list, and the rules for this list are that it needs to have at least one female-identifying lead performer performing as themselves or a female-identifying likeness, involve the female self, another woman, other women, or otherwise an implied female audience in the song's lyrics, and then have a central lyrical topic or theme that's something or someone besides a man. And they came up with quite a great playlist. They've got Alicia Keys, Bikini Kill, The Blow, the great feminist Britney Spears, Janelle Monáe, MIA, Tegan and Sara, and it ends with Willow Smith. I mean, come
amazing.
On.
Amazing.
A lovely thing about bubblegum pop is that it so frequently is about little girls being little girls and isn't quite so sexually focused yet. It's maybe just about having a good time.
Yeah, in the precious few years before that takes over.
Exactly.
So I really like this idea, but I'm trying to figure out, with songs that are, let's say, like a love song, you don't necessarily know what the gender of the person being sung to is. So
well,
how would you...
True. As if it's second person, if you're singing like you make me feel blah blah blah, mm-hmm. But if you're singing second person, he, you know, like, or there's some sort of giveaway that it's a man you're talking about, and I think it
nobody used second person better to mask gender than homosexual men in the 70s.
Yeah,
Elton John and Freddie Mercury, a lot of you.
Yes, and Melissa Etheridge, right?
And Luther Vandross.
Though I was listening to Rocket Man, and he talks about his wife there, and because I know it's Elton John, I'm like, wait, no.
It was a character.
I guess.
He had a wife. They all had wives. It was the 70s.
Yeah.
Oliver, what are you all about this week?
I am playing catch up with the final season of Parks and Rec, and I have in the last week have basically, along with my wife, binge-watched everything except for the last two episodes, which I think were aired on the same night. And I have to say, it just reminds me so much of how this was such a great show, especially the lightness and sweetness of it. You know, it was funny without being mean-spirited and without having to be – and look, I love Broad City. I'm on record on this show for loving Broad City. But this is just a very different – I mean, they're both funny shows, but Parks and Rec has this – again, this light sweetness to it where people can be mean to each other, but in the end, you know, everyone sort of loves each other without having – this hyper-awkward, painful situation building that comedies like Broad City have. And my point here is I'm just going to really miss the fact that Parks and Rec is no longer – I mean, at this point, it's no longer on the air. I'm still like a month behind the fact that it ended. But this show is now reminding me how much I'm going to miss the fact that it's no longer going to be around.
Oliver, do you think Lil Sebastian will get a pilot this season?
Lil Sebastian's dead, man.
He's
not coming back.
Oof.
But the actor who played Lil Sebastian, I mean, Lil Sebastian is a character that died. There's
you know
a real Lil Sebastian who played Lil Sebastian.
At this point, given the kind of shows that NBC seems to be giving pilots out to, I would not be surprised.
What if somebody slapped Lil Sebastian?
Season two on the slap, the pony slap. Okay.
Oh, slap.
Okay.
Winner, what are you all about this week?
Mission Impossible 5 trailer came out. It looks so, it was so good. I was at the gym yesterday and all the guys in the weight room put their weights down and go stare at the TV and look at it. They're all just rats.
All right, I have a question because I watched it and I'm kind of hyped for it. But what happened to Ethan Hunt's wife? Because we see her at the very end of the last and we know she's not dead, but is she going to be back in this one?
Okay, Oliver, look, that's not a central plot point.
That is
right?
a central plot point.
I don't even
Oliver.
Give a shit.
Listen, she was
nerve.
A big part of the third
I don't care about
one.
Michelle Monaghan in this
they
instance,
come back,
okay?
But the woman they cast even looks like her. That shit
sure.
is confusing.
Whatever.
Come on.
Maybe she'll take a Velcro mask off and it'll be her. Who knows? Maybe, I don't know. That's why the trailer is such, presented as such. Let's talk about the main point of the trailer, right? I don't care about that minuscule plot point, all right? We're talking about him hanging off a plane. We're talking about multiple locales. There's a butt twice in a bikini, which is always nice to add. You know, he likes to have the eye candy. He does impossible shit and in these movies. I expect the impossible.
It's like he's on a mission to do impossible.
I think Tom Cruise is one of the greatest actors of our generation.
And I would agree, actually.
Thank you. And he puts his Depends all. Well, he puts his all into. He goes to London for 2 years to develop this. And I in July 31st, I am getting it.
I'm
getting
Winner
this project.
About the fact that even in a bad film, Tom Cruise is almost always watchable. Like, yes. Jack Reacher, not a great film. He is
totally
watchable.
Watchable.
And it's by the director of
yes.
Jack Reacher's
yes.
doing Mission Impossible.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Because there's always this, like, throbbing mania just underneath the surface mm-hmm. of Tom mm-hmm. Cruise.
You say this like it's a bad
yes.
thing.
No, it's just
and
always there.
In an action
there.
Movie, you can use that. In an
you
action
can use
movie,
that.
That's right. advantageous. Like, these movies agreed. Aren't interesting to me, but he does them the right way.
That's why yeah. I think Ed Norton plays a little bit of Tom Cruise in Birdman. There's this searing intensity where he's like, look, I know I'm a good actor. I'm getting the best performance out of you. Work with me. I'm open
yeah.
to work. Like,
and he has the cockiness that, like, early Tom Cruise especially
exactly,
had.
Exactly.
That's
so that's why I loved that movie. And I saw
no Renner in the trailer, but I'm pretty sure he's cast. So what's up with that?
Renner's in the entire... They released the full-length trailer today. So Renner's all up in it.
Oh,
Bing
okay.
is back.
All right.
You've got a lot of the...
No Paul Patton, though.
Chap from around... near where Colin's from, that guy. And
I think it is called England.
England. I've heard of it. He's in it a okay. bunch, who I love. If I loved him so much, I'd know his name. I can just see his hair and I can hear his voice. So there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of Mission Impossible-ish elements in, you know, he was at the Kremlin last time, barely made it out of that. Barely made it through a dust storm in Dubai. Now he's hanging off a military jet. If you guys haven't seen this trailer, I'm going to post it in the group.
There's so much fucking hanging in those movies. Yes.
So much hanging.
But I propose Pop Rocket screening
like,
with Winner to go
time
watch
you
this
hung
movie.
Off of anything?
Hung off of anything. Why don't you lean on something, Ethan Hunt? Why don't you lean?
Yeah.
So you guys, can we go on a date? Can we go on a date and see this movie?
100%.
Let's do this.
And I want to go to the fancy theater I pick, and I want to get drunk, and I want to get high beforehand.
So you're talking
this
about
sounds
the Arclight.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Oliver and Margaret, if possible, we would like to meet your significant others.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's been done.
You're listening to Pop Rocket. We will be right back after this to talk about South by Southwest. Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are...
Winter Mitchell.
Oliver Wang.
Margaret Wappler.
All right, Winter Mitchell, you went to Texas recently.
I sure did. I went to Austin for South by Southwest Interactive. I didn't go for music and film. I only really went for the interactive portion.
There's also comedy. Respect that there is comedy.
I was there for the comedy part and didn't even get to... Frickin' Hannibal Buress and Bill Burr did a show same night. My mind exploded and I was like, I'm not going to either one. Just screw it. I couldn't pick. I couldn't
analysis
pick.
But what were the
big finds this year?
Okay, the highlights... What I want to say is that South by Southwest Interactive portion is a growing... aspect of the festival as a whole. And so the audience that was there, the people that were participating, anybody who went to Interactive was wildly different than the people who end up leaving South by Southwest for music. So it was very like nerdy, very dorky, which is totally my base. So I wanted to get as much as I could from everything that I, you know, took part in. So a couple of things that stood out to me were the robots that help you with depression. There's a there's a robot that they've created. I will link to the name of the company or post in the group, and I'm sorry I don't have it. But they, you talk to the robot, and the robot asks you a series of questions, and as you respond to the questions, the robot develops like a relationship with you and starts sort of probing more, and it's more like a tell me about that. Well, how does that make you feel? And they found that when they put the robots in front of like people who've just come back from war or people who are getting over PTSD or people who have experienced manic depression, it helps for them not to, this sounds so messed up, but like some people don't want to talk to others, so they want to talk to something that's just going to take in what they're saying and let them sort of therapize that way.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of that like Temple Grandin hug machine.
Yes.
You know, that she developed?
Yes.
Seriously.
But more interactive, apparently.
But more interactive. Yeah.
Hugs and talk.
Hugs and talk. So.
Do I need to make a joke about the robots fucking you? Should I make a joke about the robots fucking you, or should we say that this is your adult?
Guys,
they slide a hand up your legs.
No,
slowly.
I don't want to go there. God. Anywho, so then we went to from there to the robots that are. Don't listen to what Guy just said. The robot doesn't do that. Virtual reality glasses. There was a lot of those. I tried on about four or five pairs from some freaky Dutch guys. And then there were my friend Lisa Brooke. Her husband, Scott Brooke, is at Jaunt, which is a virtual reality company that was purchased by Facebook. And they have a whole experience that you can actually put your phone into. You can download a bunch of content. That was really cool. There's also the meerkat of it all. I mean, I got a chance to meet Ben Rubin, and I was so. This is how
Ben Rubin is
the CEO and creator of Meerkat. And I went to a cool little party that my girlfriend Erica Katz, who created Spring, she threw a little hotel party. Everybody loves a hotel party, especially with. She had the best swag bag, by the way.
Oh, that's important.
So important, so key. Thank you, darling, for that. I saw a kid wearing a Meerkat shirt, and I like leapt over a couch, and I was like, give me Ben's number. I need Ben's email. I need his number. I need his email or something. And I didn't know that it was Ben. So he goes, okay. Like, I'm going to give it to you. And I was like, wait, are you Ben? He's like, yeah. And I'm like, he gives me the shirt off his back. So I have a Meerkat shirt, which
great.
I'm going to promptly fold and keep and tuck away. So I got a chance to hang out with him and talk about Meerkat. I mean, he was being courted by everybody. He got access to every single thing that happened at South by. Every party I went to, he was right there with the celeb. I mean, this is like early Zuckerberg levels of fame that he's about to embark upon. It's already been, you know, invested in by Greylock, $12 million against $40 million valuation. I mean, this is very quick.
I think Guy has a question.
Sure.
I just, like, South by Southwest just happened, and then TED happened in Vancouver. And winner's going to screech and get mad, but I just wanted to ask Oliver and Margaret, like, do you think that these sort of like generalized big idea conventions, because South by Southwest started out as a music convention, right?
Right.
Yes.
Like
yes.
As a music festival. But these like big idea festivals, are they just a gigantic circle jerk for America's moneyed classes? Or are we getting stuff out of them?
Wait, can I say something real quick before they answer? I have a point to this. I went to a bunch of panels, which there are panels happening besides all the parties that I went to and the swag that I collected. And the panels that I went to, so many people who have so much money who are claim to be innovators, who claim, I'm not naming any names, but claim to be innovators and claim to be like, you know, the top influencers of this vertical had the most boring panels and had the most people leave the panels. So I personally think that it is a circle jerk to an extent, but there's a lot of communication that happens outside of the convention center. But I'd love to hear your guys' point.
I've never been, so I can't really comment in a firsthand way. From afar, maybe, but I just feel like there's so much, not so much even resistance, but South by Southwest has gotten so much backlash, especially from people who used to go to it, you know, back when it was just this kind of smaller music festival. And now it's sort of grown into something else that we were talking earlier about, sort of who controls the narrative. You know, I feel like the narrative for South by Southwest is no one sees it as this like kind of quaint, you know, kind of innocent, you know, organic.
Grassroots.
Yeah, yeah. It's none of that.
All of that left a long time ago. Yeah.
But not having been myself, I'm not in a position to comment as to whether that's a fair or unfair evaluation of it.
I mean, I haven't been to TED or South by Southwest, but I will say that TED definitely leaves me an impression sometimes like it is for rich people spawning off their beautiful ideas that can be compressed into 18 minutes or whatever the time slot is and that don't always necessarily translate into hard action or really true solutions. And I do think sometimes there's like a kind of off-putting guru culture that persists there. Like even when you just watch the speeches on YouTube, it can be really kind of like, okay, slow your roll, Mr. Jesus.
The good ones, the good ones all have that low, even vocal tone that are off-putting. I saw one from London that was lovely. It was a woman talking about sort of like the impact of coming out. I always talk about gay stuff. I'm sorry. But it was like, it was still a fucking TED talk and it felt annoying. But Margaret, here's my question. You're giving your TED talk. What do you wear?
Oh, my God. What do I wear? I mean, that would take me like a couple of days of real thought.
They have a workshop for what you should wear, you know.
Really? Mm.
Yes.
What did they say?
I started investigating over the weekend. I didn't read it.
Casual.
I was more concerned about what I would actually say. I didn't want to read something that was going to insist that I wear like Chicos.
Khakis and
a little linen,
a lovely blouse,
a lovely like
a sash.
Oliver, you know.
But to
Oliver, what do you got?
On Guy's point, I'm wondering what the rest of the panel thinks. Which is, I feel like we are so now inundated with people trying to sell us big ideas that no ideas feel that big anymore.
No, I will tell you at South by, the reason why I keep talking about Meerkat is because I consider myself an early adopter. If I like something, I like it. I stay with it. If I don't like something, I think
read,
it's whack.
Stock options. She's trying to.
Well,
winter.
No,
I mean, get in
like,
on the floor
look,
on this
like,
one. All
no,
right.
I'm
answer
like,
this
really...
question. Do you have investment in Meerkat? Are you working for Meerkat?
No, I want to work for Meerkat. I've definitely had like conversations with them about how I could work with them, but not anything serious yet. But like the reason why I like them so much is because I believe that they have actually shifted into a platform that would actually be useful. And there were so many people there that were hawking wares that had nowhere to go.
But so Twitter bought Periscope, which is a similar service, and then a couple weeks later, they cut off Meerkat from having access to their whatever the hell that thing's called.
API.
Yeah. Isn't Twitter set up to basically ether Meerkat if it wanted to?
It could, but what I was saying to you earlier is that Meerkat has, if they wanted to do that with Periscope, Meerkat has showed all their cards for now. They actually have more money now, so they can start, you know, adding, setting up functionality and adding on features that will make them as robust as Periscope, but there's no guarantee what's going to happen. The reality is that everybody has sort of latched onto it now. They've sort of put an implied brand relationship. Jimmy Fallon's doing it. Jimmy Kimmel is doing it. White House did it last week.
I feel like it's early enough where they're not solidified there, where someone else couldn't just come from on their blind side.
They could be purchased by Twitter. Like this is what you want when you create a product. You want people to get freaking excited. You want the people that are influencers to use it, and you want somebody to sweep in and give you money so you can live. That's it. So he deserves all the attention that he gets. There was a lot of people out there that didn't deserve all the attention that they got. And I went to some of their panels and some of them I felt like just fell flat. Some of them were really smart.
I went to South by Southwest like 2 years ago and I was there for comedy stuff and I saw some movies, but I also went to some panels because like I worked for G4. I used to be in something vaguely related to tech. And like I went to like gaming panels and watching those assholes up on those daises. Pretty certain that they're a big deal and all just rolling in cash. At moments like that, I'm like, thank God for trolls. Thank God for every 16-year-old boy talking shit at them. They are a godsend.
But you, like, the thing about going there, though, is that you get, my feet were swollen to 2 times their size, but I plan to be doing a lot, going back to panels, going to dinners, doing that, this, that, and the other. And I spent a lot more time interacting with people that I never get a chance to talk to because they're so busy. I think that's a good reason for going. Like when I weigh the ROI, like I learn some stuff. I socialize with some people that I love, my Funny or Die crew. You know, I went to my friend Tom McLeod did a dinner at the Mill. And, you know, I like the idea of interacting, being the ages that we are. We're considered, you know, a little bit more senior than the people that we saw there. I mean, I saw 21, 22, 23 year olds. But also, there is a lot of eligible men there.
Well, you make an interesting point.
That's what they say about the tech industry.
Yes.
In a world where so much of what we're doing is remote, or like we are able to work with one another from a distance, like there is something valuable in having that one weekend a year where everybody gets to get shit-faced together.
Yeah.
And be humans.
Yeah. And that's, I definitely felt more human than I've felt in a long time. I ate a lot of really good food. I hung out with all of my favorite people and I learned a lot. I mean, I recommend you go and check it out next year if you can. I wish I could say more about music. I saw D'Angelo perform at a Samsung dinner. I didn't just lay that down there.
Okay.
My friends got me in. I got to make a shameless plug. He was great, and he hasn't performed in public in a really long time, and it was fantastic. I mean, that was, you know, Big Sean did a concert that nobody could get into because he decided he only wanted 40 people in there, and then I heard it sucked, which I'm sure it did.
As the man who interrupts you guys, I wanted to ask Margaret and Winner and Oliver, like, did you guys read about the lady, essentially, wasn't it the head of diversity for Google calling out like some Google exec for constantly
interrupting
her? Eric Schmidt.
Yeah. Eric Schmidt was called out by, I think, an audience member, was like, yeah, hey, have you noticed that you've been doing this the whole time?
And then the crowd cheered. I did that a few times. I didn't do that to get it on Mashable, but I did like call people out a couple of times because I just couldn't take it. The only person I didn't call out was Paul Feig at the Cosmopolitan panel because he made me cry because he was just talking about how much he loves women. And I actually had a sweet moment with him, but like, every other guy who rarely ever interacts with women or has women and people of color working for them, they didn't even know how to respond to my questions when I asked for more diversity and I asked for more women. I was challenging them more or less on their hiring practices because I have a huge problem with some of these large tech companies. And I look at who works there and there's barely any women. And if there are, they're definitely not women of color. So,
and some of them are leaving.
At this point,
tired of it. The LA Times just had a big story about that.
Yeah.
Well, Winner, I don't know if you've ever noticed this, but the most qualified person for a job is always a white heterosexual man.
I've heard.
If you hire anyone else, it's a diversity effort, and that means that that person is getting an unfair leg up.
That's why my plan B, if none of this shit works out, is to marry a white man. You understand that. I thought we talked about this. That's my master plan.
You guys, the fundamental message
Thank
of
you.
Pop Rocket, find yourself a nice white guy to marry. You're listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back after this. So it's that special time of year again, you guys. It's Maximum Fun Drive. Now, guys, what do people get if they donate to MaximumFun.org/donate?
Well, for $5 per month, you get exclusive bonus content. And if you donate $10 per month, you get a very snappy, exclusive tote bag that has the Maximum Fun logo on it, and it's very graphically exciting.
Margaret, that's amazing. I would think that people would be doing this just for feeling good about themselves and supporting podcasts.
No.
Is it possible that they could be enjoying a tote bag as well?
Of course. And I don't know if you've heard, but tote bags are hip.
That's amazing. If only there were some way that people could take this to even another level. Is that even possible?
As a matter of fact, Guy, it is. For $20 per month, you can get an in-flight power pack. You get a mobile device charger, that same lovely tote bag that Margaret was mentioning, a collapsible water bottle. Who knew there was such a thing? Antibacterial wipes because you're nasty. And then pilot wings. I don't know when the last time I ran across a pair of pilot wings. I'm definitely making this investment.
That's sophisticated and classic, Winter. That's amazing. It could not possibly get any better.
But wait.
There's more!
Wait? What are you saying, Oliver? There's more?
For $35 a month, you get a pair of rocket engraved shot glasses. All the kids want rocket engraved shot glasses.
I want to pour rum
Shirley
in those
Winter,
right now.
You mean
right.
printed, right?
No.
Those are printed.
We're talking about engraved. Somebody's actually taken the time and handcrafted engraved shot glasses with the Maximum Fun logo on it.
That's ridiculous value. But in addition to the fact that people are getting the high quality podcast of Maximum Fun as well. Well, we're clearly done here. There can't be anything else that we could possibly discuss.
Oh, no. I heard there's more coming around the bend. Oliver.
This is only for the ballers out there, though, because you got to drop $100 a month, and this gives you membership in dun-dun-dun, the Inner Circle, which is Maximum Fun's monthly culture club. Not the other cultural club you might be thinking of. But
Boy George has nothing to do with this.
Yeah. Well, not well, I don't know. Maybe he does. Not maybe that we know. But the way that the Inner Circle works is you get sent an item a month that is, I hate using this term, but I feel like it's appropriate here, that is curated by the good folks here, whether it's a book or it's an album or something along those lines. You will get hooked up with that once a month. So this is, again, it's $100 a month. So it's a big order. But that's what it takes to get into the Inner Circle.
Dun, dun, dun.
And
that's amazing.
And if you really, 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 really want to ball out, then for $200 a month, you get free registration for the Max FunCon 2016. Very exclusive event, very popular. I would be going this year if not for the fact that, alas, I'm going to be out of town that weekend. But Max FunCon is every year. They usually have it up at Lake Arrowhead. It is an amazing weekend of crazy people. It's both entertaining and educating, so it's very much an edutainment weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And for that,
if you've ever wanted to Margaret Wappler cosplay, this is your opportunity.
I can supply you some images. You know what my favorite looks are.
Yes.
All right, so guys, please head to MaximumFun.org/donate and show us that you appreciate the work we're doing for you. We certainly appreciate your donations. Let's go back to the show. You guys, I don't know if you've noticed over the course of the past couple of months, but every week on Pop Rocket, we ask the panel, what's your current jam? Margaret Wappler, what is your jam?
My jam for this week is Tobias Gesso Jr.'s How Could You, Babe? This album came out, I think, on the 17th, and it's all piano songs. It's very much in the 70s sort of singer-songwriter mode. We're going to hear a little bit of it right now. I want to talk about the chorus in particular, how it builds to this.
Well, nothing's as hard to do as just saying goodbye. And when love is in the way, you gotta say, I guess love ain't always right.
What I really love about this song is the way it builds to that chorus, and that there are so many like rests and pauses in the piano playing. And part of the reason that this is because Tobias Gesso Jr. fully admits to not knowing the piano all that well right now. He is thoroughly a modern musician who learned how to play piano from watching YouTube tutorials.
Wow.
And he got a big lift off on this song because Adele tweeted it as like her only tweet this year.
Oh.
One of her very few tweets this year, and was like, check this out, people. And so right now that song has like a lot of hits for a guy
amazing.
Who just kind of came out of nowhere.
That's
and
amazing.
If you're into this kind of gossip, he is
yes,
Taylor Swift's current boy toy, it's rumored.
Oh.
That might be over by the time the show
is this exclusive?
So.
It's already over right now. Actually, I just got a text.
There was like a Carole King-y like Motowniness to the singer-songwriteriness of it that was very enjoyable.
Yeah, it's true. There's definitely some Carole King vibes.
Widow Mitchell, what is your jam?
Oh, okay. So this song's called Jealous by Nick Jonas. I never even thought.
What?
It's like needle off the record. This song, you know, Tinashe and Nick Jonas and Tinashe were both going to be opening for She Who Shall Not Be Named, but I'll say her name anyways, Iggy Azalea's tour. So they've been recently emancipated from the tour. And I thought this was a black dude singing this song this time. Colin, play a little bit of it, will you please? Melodic. This is the remix of it. I wish you'd save a little bit just for me. Protective or possessive, yeah. I just want to hear the chorus. I like the chorus. I'm puffing my chest. I'm getting ready to face you. Can call me obsessed. It's not your fault that they hover. I mean no disrespect. It's my right to be hellish. I still get jealous. You're too sexy, beautiful. So this song, if I were 16, would have been my favorite song right now. But I was surprised when I finally listened to it on the radio and I got to the end of the song. The DJ was like, Nick Jonas. And I was like, and I like clutched my pearls because I couldn't believe I was listening to like a little Mormon boy or whatever he's supposed to be. Like he's saying.
It's been a long time since the Jonas Brothers.
I know.
He's like really broken out on his own. Hasn't he had like a little.
He's on The Voice right now.
Yeah. But he sounds like Michael Damon a little bit. He's giving me a little bit of Michael Damon vibes. Remember him?
Didn't he have some kind of like little sex scandal though, Nick Jonas? Like something? Like he said something?
He kept going and taking his shirt off at gay bars. It was like
that
a
what
thing
it was?
For a while.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Does he have it in him to Timberlake? Does anyone in this room think he could Timberlake?
No.
No. I mean,
he's not quite there.
He's not quite there.
Thick it up, maybe.
You mean Robin thick it up? I can see him thickening it up before I see him Timberlaking it up.
Right.
Nobody can touch Timberlake. I'm sorry, JT is like to me in a world of his own.
He is
absolutely
in a class of
yeah.
Thicking it up is far more realistic. Oliver, what is your jam?
We have Earl Sweatshirt with a song called Huey.
Ooh, yeah. Let me some Earl Sweatshirt.
Putting hand on the gates, we was jumping them. Fuck on my quicksand and my ways. Was always stuck in them, stuck it in, and our ambulance came. The first time with Shane Fast, few Los Angeles ways. My bitch say the spliff take the soul from me. And the click tighten it, it's like the low rugby. Beat the fucking beat up like it stole from me. You could talk to Clancy, you need a feature quote from me. I'm off the Lancy, I'll recall.
So I think lost in the very justifiable, you know, love affair that we've all had with the Kendrick Lamar album. Earl Sweatshirt has very quietly, I guess, relative to that, released or is about to release his new album, which is called I Don't Like Shit, I Don't Go Outside. And, you know, his first album.
Are you not going to say shit?
No, I mean, the actual album, they actually cross out the shit. So it's, I'm not being.
It's called I Don't Like Shit, I Don't Go Outside.
No, it's called I Don't Like S asterisk asterisk. T, comma, I don't go outside. Anyways.
For fuck's sake.
Anyways, winner.
Is he?
Anyways. May I continue?
Now, yes.
Anyway, so his first album, Doris, which came out at this point maybe 1 or 2 years ago, I thought was phenomenal. And out of the entire Odd Future camp, he is, to me, certainly one of the most interesting MCs out there. And, you know, is not as much, I think, into the kind of shock rap value that we see from Tyler, the Creator. He's really just much more in his head and in a, you know, in a kind of very dark way, perhaps. And this new album, again, it's sort of, I think it, if this had come out any time except for in the wake of Kendrick Lamar's album, probably would be getting more attention just because of the kind of goodwill that he generated with Doris. But what's interesting about this new album is that it's only 10 songs. It's about half an hour. My man, John Caramonica, who just reviewed it for the New York Times, basically said it makes Illmatic look like infinite jest, which is maybe a joke that only people who listen to Nas and read David Foster Wallace can understand. But, you know, in a day where, especially again, going back to Lamar, I mean, his album was 80 minutes. It took up the entire CD. And here is Earl Sweatshirt dropping something, which is basically an extended EP at best. And I'm just starting to dig into the album, but I'm looking forward to it.
Oliver, I have two questions.
Yes.
Okay, first question. His name is Earl Sweatshirt.
Yeah.
Of the of the Newport sweatshirts.
That I can't comment on.
Okay, second question. I'm not that familiar with this musical area. Are hockey ice rink organs a normal part of the musical lexicon of hip hop?
Sure. I feel like at this point, anything can kind of be thrown into it as long as you can make it sound good.
Yeah, I do think Earl Sweatshirt, he has found a way to make agoraphobia really work for him.
Yes,
do you know
he
what
has.
I mean?
No, his mom won't let him outside. Yeah. I thought that was the whole thing. His mom wouldn't let him outside after he came back from boarding school in the Philippines.
And sent him to Guam? No, I think he got sent out to the Pacific
Islands.
Yeah,
but then he came back.
Right.
Right.
Tyler.
Is there a GPS that just tracks him now?
Yes.
Because
he
was gone for so long.
No, Tyler is much more of the Oregon grinder, vagabond on, 42nd Street type of, musical
I should have added,
arrangement.
Though, on this new album, Earl does most of his own production, which is also different from the last one. So this is very much his project. So, again, looking forward to digging in.
All right, you guys, my jam, in honor of the end of this glorious second season of Looking, which I hate tweeted most of the way through, I wanted to play the song that they ended the season on. It's Simple Man by Grab Nash.
I am a simple man, and I play a simple tune.
I feel like I'm watching the episode listening
Wish
to
this. Wish that I could see you once again.
Just stare at something gray.
Like the first time. I just wanna hold you, I don't wanna hold you down.
And I mean, this song, like in that moment, because it really was a good episode. They had some better episodes towards the end of the season. But it was the essence of the hipster respectability politics of the show. It lionized this artificial, unreal simplicity and asked us to ache over the emotional lives of boring people. But I mean, it did good work. It created a gay show unlike any before. But mostly, find me 30 gay men in any city who own Simple Man by Graham Nash. And I sincerely...
They're just trying to get you to branch out a little bit, guy.
No, but the thing is, Margaret, is that there are totally gay guys who like Graham Nash.
Yes.
But they're probably going to like Beyonce alongside it. And trying to describe my world without letting there be some Beyonce in there, without letting there be some Rihanna in there, is like... my weird reverse version of the Cosby Show, if that makes any sense.
Oh my
sense.
God.
Wait, I'm going to have to sit down and like write that out on paper and figure it out.
You're
going to have to use like diagrams and arrows pointing to other categories.
It means that the Cosby Show was trying to present this view of black life that was really trying to remove anything that would be like a negative association for white people.
Oh, I get you.
And I feel like Looking is trying to create this show that's like, hey, we're not those faggots. And it's like, you can have your Graham Nash. Just don't act like I'm not a person worthy of respect because I don't own a Graham Nash song. And I did totally end up having to buy a Graham Nash song so I could make a video on my phone with that as the music of a coffee cup of Looking I bought at the HBO store today. So we don't know if Looking will get a third season.
Hope
the
not.
Show may be gone. My relentless cyberbullying may have destroyed it, but I will miss it.
Oh my God, you've already buried it.
You're going to get arrested by HBO.
Yeah.
All right. You guys, next week, Pop Rocket is going to be coming to you a little bit later in the week. As some of you guys know, I'm in New York working a job. And Margaret, Oliver, and Winter have had to deal with my inability to like figure out an appropriate time for us to do this. So we're going to switch our tapings to Friday, and then you're going to get a brand new episode of Pop Rocket on Saturday morning, or just in time for your Monday commute. So we're sorry about the change, but also we
direct
hope you enjoy
all
it.
Complaints to @GuyBranum on Twitter. FYI, he's going to take the burden.
Very
on this
true.
One.
He'll tweet back at you.
He'll tweet back
Guaranteed.
At you.
I completely will. You guys, you've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Guy Branum, with my mean friends, Winter Mitchell, Margaret Wappler, and Oliver Wang. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozymizo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to Bayou Yellow Red, Blue Hornet, Joe Fritz, Ratty Rad Brad, and Yodel Bell for the 5-star reviews on iTunes. If you haven't already, please review us. It helps us reach new listeners. Get in touch with us on Twitter at PRPod. Join the Pop Rocket Podcast Facebook group. Something we'd like your opinions on this week. What's your personal theme song or anthem? This is the last time this year we'll be asking, so if you love Pop Rocket, please go to MaximumFun.org/donate and support our show. We need your support to keep going. We're a production of listener-supported MaximumFun.org, and our producer is very calm, Colin Anderson.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.